Canto 1, Chapter 11, Sri Krishna's Entrance into Dwaraka. Sutta said, reaching the border of the prosperous region of Anatta, the territory of Dwaraka, his capital, he sounded his conch shell, the Panchajanya, which evidently ended the dejection of the inhabitants. Despite being reddened by the lips of the great adventurer, the brilliant white of the round form of the conch shell, as it was loudly sounded in his hands, looked like a swan ducking at the stems of lotus flowers. Having heard the sound that frightens the fear of material existence itself, all the citizens rapidly proceeded in the direction of the presence of their protector they had awaited so long. They, thereupon, offered their presentations of welcome to the fully satisfied, self-contented one, who by dint of his potency was their unrelenting provider. It was like offering a lamp to the sun. With cheerful, affectionate faces, they ecstatically gave gladdened speeches before the father, like friends and wards do for their guardian. They said, "We have always bowed down to your lotus feet, O Lord, like one does in the worship of Brahma and his sons and the King of Heaven. You, after all, are for the ones who desire the supreme welfare in this life, the master of transcendence upon whom the inevitable time has no grip. For the sake of our welfare, be the creator of our world and also be our mother, well-wisher, husband, father, lord and spiritual master. Following in the footsteps of you as our worshipable deity and supreme lordship, we have succeeded in our lives. Oh, how lucky we are to see again your all-auspicious form and enjoy the protection of your good self, for the sight of your affectionate, loving, smiling face is even by the demigods rarely seen. Whenever, O lotus-eyed one, you leave from here to meet your friends and relatives among the Kurus in Hastinapura and the people of Mathura, O infallible one, each moment seems to take a million years and our eyes are as useless as they would be without the sun. How can we, with you being elsewhere, live without the satisfaction of your glance that vanquishes the miseries of the world? How can we live without seeing your beautiful, smiling and decorated, attractive face?" With the sound in his ears of these words of the citizens, the caretaker of the devotees, he who teaches humanness to humanity by the distribution of his glances, entered the city of Dwaraka. The way the city of Bhagavati was protected by the Nagas, Dwaraka was protected by the strength of the descendants of Vrishni, Krishna's family, Bhoja, Madhu, Dashara, Ara, Kukura, Andaka, etc., together called the Yadus, who were all as good as Krishna himself. During all seasons, there was the wealth of orchards and flower gardens that with their trees, plants, and the hermitages also found there, formed beautiful parks around ponds filled with lotuses, increasing the beauty of the city. The gateway of the city, as also the different roads, were for the occasion painted with foremost signs and decorated with arches and flags casting their shadows in the sunshine. The avenues, streets, the marketplace and public meeting places were thoroughly cleansed, sprinkled with scented water and strewn with fruits, flowers and unbroken seeds. At the door of each residential house, there was a display of curd, unbroken fruits, sugar cane, decorations, pots of water and articles for worship like incense and lamps. Hearing that their dearest friend was coming home, his magnanimous father Vasudeva, Akrura, Ugrasena, the superhumanly powerful Balarama, Pradyumna, Charudeshna, and Samba, the son of Jambavati, all extremely happy, were alerted from their resting, sitting, and dining. Headed by elephants, carrying auspicious articles, and with the sound of conch shells and the glorifying chanting of hymns, they, together with the Brahmins, excited in cheerful expectancy, hurried towards him on their chariots. Hundreds of courtesans with dazzling earrings that enhanced the beauty of their cheeks followed in their vehicles, most anxious to meet him. There were entertainers, dancers, singers, historians, genealogists, and learned speakers who sang and glorified all the superhuman activities of the Lord. The Supreme Lord approached each of the friends and citizens who came to receive and welcome him the way it should, with due honor and respect. He, the Almighty One, with the encouragement of his glancing smile, bowed his head, greeted them with words, embraced them and shook hands with them, down to the lowest as desired, awarding his benedictions. Then, accompanied by the elderly relatives and the Brahmins and their wives, he entered the city, where he was welcomed also with blessings and praises from other admirers. While Krishna passed through the public roads of Dwarka, the ladies of standing climbed on the roofs of their houses, dear scholars, to feast their eyes on the sight of him. Even though it was their habit to look at him this way, the inhabitants of Dwarka could never get enough of the compelling sight of the reservoir of all beauty, who was the embodiment of the Infallible One. In his chest, the Goddess of Fortune resides. From the cup of his face, the eyes are drinking. By his arms, the ruling demigods abide, and his lotus feet are the shelter for the singing and talking devotees. Being served with a white parasol, fans, and a road covered by a shower of flowers, the Lord, with his yellow garments and his flower garlands, resembled a cloud surrounded by the sun, the moon, lightning, and a rainbow combined. After next entering his parental home, he was embraced by his seven mothers, who were gladly headed by Devaki, to whom he bowed his head in obeisance. When they thereupon all had put him on their laps, their breasts got wet of their affection and delight, as also because of the water of the tears that overwhelmed them. Thereafter he entered his personal unsurpassable quarters that, inhabited by his wives who numbered over 16,000, offered all that one could wish for. From a distance, seeing their husband now returned home, the ladies, utterly happy within their minds, with a coyly looking face, immediately rose up from their seats and meditations. With him before their eyes, the shy ones sent him their divine love by embracing him in their hearts in an insuperable ecstasy, but, O leader of the Bhrigus, they nevertheless choked up with tears that inadvertently fell like water from their eyes. Although he was always present at their side, even when they were alone, his feet every time appeared completely new to them. After all, who could let go of the feet of the Eternal One that are never abandoned by the Goddess of Fortune? He, without being part of it himself, created the enmity between the rulers who, from the day they were born, had become a burden to the earth with their military control over their surroundings. He brought relief by killing them, just like the wind does with bamboos, by creating fire by means of friction. The Supreme Lord, from his causeless mercy, appeared out of his own among all those who are part of this human world to enjoy a life with the worthiest of women, as if it concerned an ordinary worldly affair. Even though they were spotless and exciting with their charming smiles, the way they, with their grave expression looking from the corners of their eyes, even perplexed Cupid to give up his bow, they, as maddening first-class women, were never able to perturb his senses with their magic. Ordinary people, who see how he, in spite of his detachment, is actively engaged, consider, in their ignorance, him for that reason a human being full of attachment, as someone who is just as affected as they are. Such is the divinity of the personality of Godhead that he, despite being in touch with material nature, is never affected by its qualities. And the same is true for the intelligence of the ones always situated in the eternal truth of the Lord, who is their refuge. The women, in their simplicity and weakness, took it for granted that he would be some kind of follower who is dominated and isolated by his wife. They were as unaware of the glories of their husband as one is by imagining oneself to be the supreme controller.